But to kick off our first story, here's an introduction from some Muppet.
Life creates it. Makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us and binds us. Luminous beings though we, not this crude matter. You must feel the force around you. Here, between you, me, the tree, the rock, everywhere. Yes, even between the land and the ship.
Yes, that's right. We are talking about the force tonight. It's another edition of Materials, Fact or Fiction, where we tease out real-life equivalents to narrative drivers in science fiction. And tonight we've gone full kit and caboodle for the thing that's with us in Star Wars, as Star Wars goes on and on. I'm talking about the Force, and here to tell us more about real-life equivalents to the Force and perhaps explain what the Force is, in case you don't know, you haven't been checking out Yoda recently, is a PhD student with the McDiarmid Institute. His name is Jeffrey Wheel. He's doing his thesis in computational chemistry at Otago University, and he joins us from there. Kia ora, Jeffrey.
Kia ora, Brian. Nice to be here.
You just missed out on May the 4th.
Unfortunate timing. Oh, wow.
Well, but it's a very bad pun, you know. May the 4th be with you. But I fall for it every time. Quite a few of my friends do as well. Anyway, the Force. If you were to be asked, and I am asking you, what is the Force? Let's see if you can match Yoda in a simple explanation.
I don't know if I'm going to do Yoda, and I won't even try because it'll just get more mucked up.
Yeah, well, don't speak like Yoda, all right?
No. It's quite a weird concept. It's sort of got quite this sort of magical feeling about it. It's in the movies, it seems to do quite a lot of things. You can manipulate people, you can read their mind, and get them to say all these things. All different things, and you can even like levitate objects and things like that. But the idea of the Force there's a lot of what I think is quite cool about the Force is that especially is that there's a lot of these really cool ideas that, you know, from all science fiction, you've got the science that's coming in and trying to do like really sort of neat things with it. And the idea of thinking about the name the Force. Well, we use forces all the time. So we're always thinking about forces, especially in physics. Force is one of these big main concepts from physics. We've got lots of different types of forces, like electromagnetism, which is all about how electricity works and how magnets work. There's the weak force, which is, if I've got it right, is about like radioactive decay and things like that. There's also strong force, and there's gravity as well. So the idea of the Force is sort of, we are using the Force all the time. It's just how this Force is just quite different in that you can do all sorts of things with it.
Now, what are the weak and strong forces again?
We don't generally see them on our scale. So it's a bit hard to see, but they sort of work on the atomic scale. So we have this idea of like the weak force, and the weak force controls things like radioactive decay and how you can have an atom which has protons, it has neutrons inside of it, and how some of those little particles can sort of break apart and have neutrons that turn into protons and they spurt out electrons and sort of things like that. The strong force is about what's happening in the nucleus. So if you imagine an atom, and you've got your atom in the center, you've got your nucleus in the center, that contains your protons and it contains your neutrons, and you've got electrons whizzing around the outside. And the strong force is all about that nucleus. One thing that has puzzled people a long time ago was in a nucleus, you've got your protons that are really close to each other. And you sort of think, well, if you've got two things that are positive and they're near each other, don't they like fly away? Because they're sort of like, same way as like magnets. If you've got two north ends of a magnet, they're just going to sort of fly away. And so the idea of the strong force is trying to figure out that there's another force that allows like protons to be near each other and the neutrons to help the protons in the nucleus to be together, and so essentially to stop the nucleus from just blowing apart. So we don't just all, our protons in our bodies don't just scatter everywhere. They're sort of contained in that nucleus.
Well, if we didn't have that, we couldn't exist, because matter has to clump together in order for there to be life.
Exactly.
Right.
And actually, with a lot of the, we wouldn't exist without any of these forces. So gravity, obviously, we need to be on the ground to survive. And that also, gravity is keeping our atmosphere in Earth. It's not spreading everywhere. Electromagnetism, we actually, our bodies are full and full and full of electromagnetic force ideas that are going all around. Have you ever heard of, like, it's quite grotesque, especially when I think about it, because I come from a chemistry and physics sort of background, so I don't like thinking about biology a lot. But what he did was he sort of put metal rods into frogs and gave them, like, a little bit of electricity, and he found that the muscles started to twitch. And he gave this idea of that biology had this thing called bioelectricity, which was that electricity was sort of moving your arms and legs. And that's actually sort of correct. You have in your body, you're always dealing with electrons moving all around the place, even positive charge things moving around. And that's sort of what's, that's in a lot of a sense, it's giving us a lot of the life that we have.
Jeffrey, our brains and our nervous system absolutely depend on difference in electrical charge, don't they?
We can't live without it. And in our brains, our memories, it's all the spurts of electricity. So we are, in a sense, powered by the electromagnetic force. And in a sense, that is our force. And you could think of it even in terms of D-Force from Star Wars, about how can you manipulate, you know, people's bodies, and get that in a way is manipulating the electricity signals going through your body to move around.
How long have you had these droids?
About 3 or 4 seasons.
They're up for sale if he wants them.
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Move along. Move along.
If we go back to the Force, however, as in Star Wars, and you mentioned when in Star Wars Episode 1, which was on the whole pretty disastrous, but you know, we learned about Anakin, aka Darth Vader, as a child. And the senior Jedi, whose name now escapes me, does a blood reading of Anakin's blood. In Star Wars, the things in our blood are midichlorians, aren't they? And they're actually creatures that are in our blood force, separate to us. They allow us to use the Force. Is there anything that we could say that possibly could have a real-life equivalent in terms of what's in your blood might determine your ability to move objects of greater mass than yourself later on in your life, once you've trained this thing?
Yeah, I was having a bit of a think about this, but I'll say two things about that. So the whole idea of these, like, midichlorians is sort of, when I was doing a little bit of thinking about this, and I remember this coming out when I was a teenager, I kept thinking, this whole thing about the midichlorians, mitochondria, they sound very familiar. And there probably is a little bit of basis in that, because mitochondria, in a sense, so in our cells, we have what's called a eukaryotic cell, which is the cells that animals have. And we have lots of these organelles in this. We have, like, the nucleus, we have Golgi apparatus. I'm trying to remember all my year 12 biology stuff. We also have these mitochondria. And what's really interesting about the mitochondria, in your cells, you've got DNA, and your DNA helps to make everything about the cell and get it to do its functions. But it doesn't contain any information about the mitochondria, how to make that. And it turns out mitochondria have its own DNA. And there's a theory about early life that mitochondria and the cells themselves, that are like our cells, at some point in, like, early life, there could have been some sort of, like, symbiotic relationship where you had mitochondrial bacteria things floating around. You had some cells or you had, like, bacteria that eventually turned into us. And they sort of formed this relationship where we gave the mitochondria, like, sugar, and it gave us ATP, which ATP is it is, oh God, I'm trying to remember my words, inosine triphosphate, and that gives us all the energy to do all the sorts of things. It's essentially the easiest way to transport energy around our cells. That, in a sense, I think I have a feeling when Lucas was, you know, coming up with these ideas, that was probably, in a sense, we have these little creatures inside ourselves that are like the powerhouses. They are giving us energy to do things.
And a great disturbance in the Force, as if millions of voices suddenly cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced. I fear something terrible has happened.
However, Jeffrey, the miracle in terms of us humans, if that theory is correct, is the fact that we've actually managed to combine all those adaptations into one genetic code, which we pass on in our chromosomes, yes. That somehow those various life forms, their genetic code was combined. I'm not going to ask you to answer how that happened, because that does seem to me to be, you know, that's where I think, you know, nonfiction wins out. Has been more remarkable than things like, and I'm going to ask you about this, sensing the Force. You know, Obi-Wan, he knows that a planet's been blown up because he senses it. Now, in other words, he's psychic. Is there anything that we know of in real life that mirrors that?
Well, sort of in a sense. I'm just thinking now about something blows up. Well, you could potentially have something like sensing the Force in that sense, because again, this is coming back to electromagnetism. And all of these forces that I was talking about at the beginning, they all have this thing called like a force carrier. So it's the thing that is because it's a bit weird that like I can sort of lift, like with a magnet, for example, it's quite weird how it hovers. And this is something that people like Newton were always thinking, well, but like things have to sort of push, things need to be physically touching each other to exert a force on them. So how does things like gravity, how does things like electromagnetism work, where it seems very ghostly? And so the idea is we have this force carrier that is essentially like it's a particle that is moving essentially moving that information along. And in terms of electromagnetism, that's light. So all the light that you're seeing around you, that's the force carrier for electromagnetism. And in terms of like sensing that a force, you know, something like that, you know, something's blowing up and you sense it all the way along. Well, in a sense, we sort of do that, for example, with like satellites. So I can't remember what the satellite is, but we've got lots of satellites that were sent away from Earth, and they're going as far as possible into space.
Voyager.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, perfect. Yes, that's the name. Yes, like Voyager, and we're getting signals from them using the Force, which is in this case, as we're calling it, it is the electromagnetism force, which is the photon, and so we're getting sort of signals from them all the time. So in that sense, and then, you know, they're taking photos, they send it back to us. So in a sense, you could almost think that maybe not on the human scale, it might be a bit hard to sense the Force, but we do have like mechanisms to relay information from one place to another. And so in that sense, that is, you know, a force in a sense. It's just not it's just not on one person. We might need to, you know, be a little bit like Google and interface with Google and be on the internet connected to a satellite and, you know, going out. So that's not, you know, in terms of that, in that side, that's actually not too far-fetched.
Don't try to frighten us with your sorcerer's ways, Lord Vader. Your sad devotion to that ancient religion has not helped you conjure up the stolen data tapes or given you clairvoyance enough to find the rebels' hidden fort.
Find your lack of faith disturbing.
Enough of this. Vader, release him.
As you wish.
Magnetism, is it something that only affects metals? You know how you've got it, you get a magnet and it's able to, say a fridge magnet. It doesn't work on plastic, but it works on the metal of a fridge. But to some extent, do all elements have some magnetism? It's just some is more than others. For example, the magnetism in metal is stronger than the force of gravity, which we're pulling it down the side of the object it's attached to.
This is a really neat question. I really like this question because The answer is yes. So there's another type of magnetic property called diamagnetism. And the way that this works is if you've got a magnet and you've got any sort of material, so even like maybe a piece of wood or even water, if you put a magnet next to it, you can actually, it will actually get repulsed by it. And if I quite like these types of experiments because you can actually do these at home. If you get a magnet and you put it near some water and it will move. The problem is that usually the force of friction, you know, having the water on your table means it doesn't move very easily. So,
well, Jeffrey, I've actually experienced hundreds and thousands, you know, the coloured little bits sugar-coated candy or whatever, tiny things, been stuck to the side of a plastic cylinder. And I'm thinking, what could hold them if it's not magnetism? I don't think it's friction.
That's a really interesting question. I never really noticed that. I'll be doing that tonight. I'll be going to the supermarket and grabbing some 100,000s now.
Yeah. The point that I'm trying to make is that maybe a magnet could have an effect on me. I could be drawn to a magnet if the magnetic force was strong enough. What about having a being like a human, you know, like some human character from Star Wars, having some kind of magnetic force that allows that person to move other objects?
It is definitely possible with this idea of magnetism. Sorry, diamagnetism. So if you had, a magnet and you've got some sort of material, there's this effect in physics where when you've got a magnetic field, so we sometimes think about magnets exerting like this magnetic field, which sometimes if you've ever got like a magnet and you put it in some iron filings, you might have seen like the filings start to make sort of shapes around.
Oh, yes, yes. It's one of the favourite experiments from my childhood.
Exactly. And we think about that, those lines as being magnetic fields. This is something that I believe it was Faraday came up with, is the idea of these fields real, and they definitely are. But in a lot of materials, sometimes materials try to reduce the amount of magnetism that's going through them, or at least try to keep it to remain the same. And so what this does as a result is it causes like a repulsion force. And if you put any sort of material near a magnet, it technically gets repulsed by it. The problem is how big a magnet do you need? So there's been a lot of experiments where scientists have got like a really big magnet, and then they just put a whole bunch of things in and see if they float, essentially. And so scientists have put things like hazelnuts in, they put pieces of pizza on a magnet and got it to float. The classic one is frogs, getting a frog to float above a magnet. You can essentially float anything, including humans, and there are no side effects. You don't have any issues coming off it. You just feel a bit dizzy when you're floating around. However, the type of magnet that you need is very strong, and that's why we don't feel magnets pushing us around. So those type of objects, which are very small, they need 16 or 17 Tesla magnet. Now, to put that in perspective, an MRI machine that you got at the hospital, those create a magnetic force that is, or a magnetism of about 1.5 or 3 Teslas. So you need, if I've got it right, maybe about 5 or 6 lots of MRI machines to make even just small things float. So whether you can get a human to float or even one of those, I think it's the X-Wings, not The New Hope, but the fifth move.
The Empire Strikes Back. I know the one you mean. I know the scene.
Empire Strikes Back when Luke is getting the float. It is possible he could definitely make it float, but he would need a very, very big magnet underneath there. So maybe that's what the force is. Maybe what the force is getting everybody just to stop in position, get like a really big magnet, put it beneath something, and then say, okay, can everybody just play along with it?
Repeat the price for your lack of vision.
Oh.
One last thing, maybe. I mean, we could talk so much about various aspects of the Force, which is kind of a one-size-fits-all solution to all the problems that superheroes might have to deal with. And then there's the added bonus of good versus evil, the dark side versus the light side. We could talk about the ability to generate lightning. Has anybody? I guess you can do that quite easily, can't you? Build up a charge and then touch something. Everyone who works in Antarctica in the dry climate there knows that you've got to earth yourself all the time.
Yeah, no, this is definitely possible. The machine, Vandegraaff generator. You know, at high school, did you ever use a Vandegraaff generator? So you might have touched this little machine that was sort of whizzing along, and your hair might have begun to stick up.
Oh yeah. I didn't do it. Yeah, I was too chicken.
Oh, really?
I watched other people's hair go up because I thought, I'm going to get zapped if I step off the... No, you can do it, mate, not me.
Well, definitely possible. You can use things like Vandegraaff generators can, get that static electricity going, and, you can have zaps going as well. In those cases, the zap is really small. This is one of the early works of, Tesla. Tesla was a well-renowned scientist. He was from Serbia, so that's sort of part of Europe. And he created lots of sort of electricity-based inventions. And one of the things that when he was first trying to figure out electricity was, how do things conduct and how does all this work? And as long as you are standing with your hand touched to something, as you say, you're grounded, then if something comes along, like some sort of electricity that hits you, it can just easily go through, and as long as it's got something to ground to.
The other thing I was thinking about is we are programmed to think that all we see is what everything sees, right? In other words, I'm talking about our ability to pick up the visible spectrum of light, electromagnetic radiation. But there's huge amounts of that spectrum that we don't see. But that doesn't mean it's not there, and it doesn't mean that other animals might not be able to see it. For example, you haven't mentioned this yet, but one of the great mysteries is, how is it that migratory birds can travel thousands of kilometres and not get lost? Are they sensing a magnetic field or something like that that we can't, but they can?
This is definitely one of those disturbances in the Force, isn't it? This is definitely sensing the Force. Yeah, animals are very good at sensing things that we do not, we don't notice. Very good examples of these are, especially as you say, in the electromagnetic spectrum. So, for example, a lot of our native birds and birds that, especially pollinating birds, they're very good at seeing ultraviolet light. And the reason for that is because many plants have little parts on them that are able to reflect some of the ultraviolet light that's coming from the sun, hitting it and then radiating out.
I was in Dunedin the other day with my son, and we went to the museum and we saw the infrared camera and, be able to pick up heat. And I was thinking about animals that can see heat, and that's another example of maybe being able to sense stuff or have that force power to sense stuff that we humans don't have.
Definitely. This is definitely these types of ways that animals have been able to essentially take advantage of their niches. And for infrared, I think the classical example is snakes, I think, where snakes can see in infrared, and they use that to be able to hunt. There's a whole different world around us. If you're in the eyes of an animal, or even in the nose of an animal, for example, like dogs who can smell all sorts of weird smells, there's definitely another world that we can't sense that animals do a much better job at and really take advantage of.
However, all of this in one handy human-sized package, we're a long way from that, aren't we?
That might require us to go quite some way into the future and maybe into a galaxy far, far away to find that technology.
Jeffrey, there's no answer to that. Thanks so much for joining us.
Excellent. No, glad to be on. I've had a really fun time just playing around with ideas.
Jeffrey Wheel, PhD student at Otago University in chemistry, and works in the lab of McDiarmid researcher Anna Garden, giving us his scientific take on the Force from Star Wars.